It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Over the weekend, if you picked up a newspaper in Pittsburgh, you wouldn't have been able to avoid seeing the blaring headlines. Guilty, Pitt researcher convicted of poisoning wife, trumpeted the Tribune Review in bold black letters, while the Post-Gazette went with Ferrante guilty, jury convicts Pitt researcher in poisoning death of wife. The case of Robert Ferrante, a 66-year-old neuro researcher convicted of poisoning his wife, Autumn Klein, has received international attention. Here to explain how and why this case became such a sensation as it played out over the last year and a half is Post-Gazette reporter Paula Reed Ward, who covered the trial. Paula Reed Ward, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Before we proceed with how the trial played out, give us a brief summation of the Ferrante murder case.
What happened originally is that Dr. Autumn Klein returned home from work late on April 17th in 2013. Her husband said that he greeted her at the door, and she immediately collapsed, grasping her head. Over the next 3 days, the UPMC Presbyterian staff tried to save her, but they were unable. Within days, the medical examiner's office learned that she had died from cyanide poisoning, and shortly after that, her husband, Robert Ferrante, became a suspect.
And how did this case begin to blow up, not just as a local and regional story, but also as a case that's going to make its way to 48 Hours and other national shows?
I think that what you had here was a combination of factors. You have a defendant who's a prominent neuro researcher. He's a PhD. He moved here from Boston with millions of dollars in grant money to the University of Pittsburgh. You have his wife, a rising star in the field of neurology. She practiced specifically women's neurology, focusing on women's issues while they were pregnant. You had two people that are unlikely to find themselves in this kind of circumstance. And then you add into it that it's a poisoning death with cyanide. It was just a bizarre set of circumstances.
The trial lasted 10 full days. How did it play out?
It actually was fascinating. The prosecution focused very much, even though they're not required to, they talked a lot about motive. They brought out Google searches and marital discord between the two and the relationship. And they also focused very much on the science and the cyanide that they believed killed Dr. Klein. For the defense side, what they tried to do was make it that she didn't die from cyanide at all, and in fact that her symptoms were consistent with many other potential problems, including heart disease.
What were the major issues that the jurors were confronted with?
I think a couple of the sticking points for the jurors were likely the defense experts talking about that she didn't die from cyanide. There was an interesting quirk in the case, which was that the first set of cyanide test results that they got back from Quest Diagnostics showed that she died from a level of 3.4 milligrams per liter in her blood. What happened was that calculation was done incorrectly, and the result had to be amended. And it changed to 2.2, which was still a fatal level, as argued by the prosecution. But the defense focused on that change, arguing that she didn't die from cyanide at all, and you can't trust the results. In addition to that, they had another lab result from a different company that showed the levels were normal. So that issue right there, the cyanide results, were really the big question that the jurors were faced with.
Who did the defense end up calling?
The defense called four scientific experts. There were toxicologists and emergency doctors from California and New York. And then they called Cyril Wecht from here in Pittsburgh, very well-known, renowned forensic pathologist.
One of Ferrante's defense attorneys, William Diffenderfer, said that Cyril Wecht's testimony that he did not believe the death was caused by cyanide poisoning and that the cause of Dr. Klein's death should have been ruled undetermined won the day. Why didn't it sway the jury in the end?
I think that one of the problems with all of the defense experts, including Dr. Wecht, was no one could rule out exclusively that she didn't die from cyanide poisoning. They all agreed that it could have been. The symptoms were similar to that. But no one could say with any definition that it wasn't cyanide. And so when you have those contradictory opinions, and then you have prosecution experts saying, absolutely, it looks like cyanide poisoning. And, oh, by the way, here are positive test results we got from two other places. I think that the defense experts just, they couldn't carry the day.
So in the end, what was the key evidence that proved, at least for the jury, that Ferrante did in fact poison his wife?
I think the cyanide test results were key, but I think on top of that, the prosecution presented evidence of dozens of Google searches and websites that were visited on Ferrante's laptop computer in the months and days leading up to her death, as well as in the days after. Those Google searches included searching for things like cyanide poisoning and human toxicity for another toxin, and how would a medical examiner or coroner detect poisoning? And I think when you put all of those things together, the jurors looked at those and they looked like motive.
It's interesting because I'm guessing there aren't many cases where someone is convicted of murder based on their Google searches. Does this seem a little unusual to someone like you who's covered a lot of hundreds, in fact, of murder trials?
It does. And one of the things that I think is really fascinating about this case, and the defense made a big deal out of it in closings, it seems so ridiculous that you'd have a neuro researcher who wants to kill his wife and do it as blatantly as it seems he did. He ordered the cyanide from his own lab office with his staff on a university credit card. He had all these Google searches. His thumbprint was found on the bottle. And the defense said, who would be so dumb as to commit murder in this way? But the prosecution's theory was he didn't think he would get caught. And so he didn't think anybody would know she died from cyanide poisoning. And he was this close to getting away with it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with Post-Gazette reporter Paula Reed Ward, who covered the trial of Robert Ferrante, who was accused of and eventually found guilty of murdering his wife, Autumn Klein, a sensational trial that wrapped up on Friday night as the jury read its verdict. And Paula, describe the scene in the courtroom as the verdict was read.
You know, in every verdict, there's a lot of tension when you come in the room, kind of high energy. And Dr. Klein's family was sitting in the first front row of the courtroom. They were clasping hands. Several of them were already crying before anything even happened. Ferrante came in. He sat at the defense table. He didn't have his glasses on. He was a little bit quiet. He was chatting with his defense attorneys, particularly with Wendy Williams, who had her hand on his back, kind of trying to calm him. His family was in the row behind him, his adult son and daughter and his sister. And when the verdict was read, it was a very quiet reaction in the courtroom. There were no outbursts, no shouting or anything like that. Dr. Klein's mother was sobbing quietly behind me. Ferrante's daughter laid her head on her brother's shoulder, and he just let out a big sigh. And that was it. It was very quiet.
And these, the son and daughter who testified in Ferrante's defense were his children from a previous marriage.
That's correct. That's correct.
And so what happens next? There will be a sentencing. Describe where it goes from here.
The next step would be a sentencing that's scheduled for February 4th. Because he was found guilty of first-degree murder, it's an automatic sentence of life without parole. After that, he will be sent to the state prison system, where he will be classified and designated to a specific prison. His attorneys have said that they will very likely appeal. There were a lot of search warrants and motions filed early in the case that I think that they plan to look at in terms of what they might be able to challenge of the conviction. And from there, it'll play out in the appeal system probably over the next year and a half to 2 years.
And in the meantime, this story is going to be told on national television. Dateline is covering it or has covered it and is in the process of putting together a story, as is 48 Hours. And they have used you as part of how they're going to tell the story. Describe how that all came about.
This case very early on got attention from the national networks just because of the details of it and the people involved. So they have both been kind of looking around from the edges, deciding whether they're to come or not. And in the week before jury selection, they in fact did come. Producers from both networks were here and doing their jobs trying to get people to interview and talk to and follow the trial and get as much detail and inside scoop as they can.
And you've covered hundreds of murder trials, as we've mentioned. What makes this one stand out? Where does this rank in terms of all of the cases you've covered?
You know, it's unfortunate that there is something like a typical kind of homicide, but there is. And this one is completely atypical. You have a poisoning, which is very, very unusual to start with. And then you bring in the types of people that are involved in this. They're both, you know, upper class. They live in a $500,000 home. You know, she's a neurologist. Her husband is a neuro researcher. They are not the types of people that are typically involved in something like this.
Paula Reed Ward is a reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette covering the Ferrante trial, and she'll be seen in CBS's coverage as part of 48 Hours coming up later this year. Paula Reed Ward, thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll look at how hackers could endanger U.S. infrastructure. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.